What happened when I took Born outside on purpose? Soon enough, Wick would find out Born occupied another apartment, and find in that fact further proof of threat. But a more immediate problem was that around Born, I had to be careful not to mention the outside, because the concept of the city, of anything beyond the balcony cliffs, now captivated him to a worrying extent. In time, whether we lived apart or together, I would have no control. No matter how he might want to keep his word, Born would be tempted to go out. "What rhymes with crappy?" Born would ask. "Happy?" "No." "Shitty." "No, that word doesn't rhyme with crappy." "But it rhymes with city, and that rhymes with happy." "None of that is true." "True rhymes with fact." "In a way, I guess." "Fact rhymes with city and happy." "No, in this case, city and happy put together rhyme with opinion." "You don't share my opinion?" Born, his asymmetrical rhymes were like bad puns in three dimensions. Tiring, often scatological, or as he put it, only natural, which rhymes with cultural, but always coming to a point. And the point he would generally arrive at was that he wanted me to take him out into the city. But I exhibited discipline, did not rush to bring Born along with me, even though that was the only remedy. I ventured out twice more first, although not in the exhilarating, dangerous sense of climbing up onto a sleeping moored. I bought this time by promising Born that the third time I went out into the world, he would go with me. I would be his teacher, even though I was still being taught. Twice then, I took to the streets alone, and twice I thought of myself as bait. I would not believe in my traps or my ability to see traps. I would see myself as bait, like the dead astronauts who had never fallen to Earth but looked like they had. To be bait was to think of what or who I was bait for, and what might entice those who might want to take the particular bait that was me. I was 28 years old and from another country. Someone who scavenged for a living and who, when not searching for spare bits of biotech, took care of a child who wasn't human. I was good at using weapons. I could sniff out a trap from a distance. I had no formal education, but had been home-taught well and could read at an advanced level. I could, with Wick's guidance, grow things in my bathroom that I could eat. That was the treasure that was me. And every time I went out, I would need to gauge who would ignore the resume to gather the protein or want the skill set snuffed out. When I came back from those expeditions with enough salvage for Wick to take it as a sign that I had fully recovered and that perhaps our relationship might recover too, I had no excuse not to take Born with me. Because Born was coming with me, I would have to forage much closer to home, which was against the rules, but I didn't have much choice. I had been circling closer to home anyway, on my own. Mord was a mighty weight that could not disguise itself, but the magician was the blade slipped between the ribs that you don't sense until too late. Her signs and symbols were everywhere, and certain neighborhoods had become unsafe swiftly, overrun by a mix of her true believers and her converts in the flesh. A scrawled M on the side of a building might mean Mord, or it might not. I had decided to hazard the factory district to the northwest of the balcony cliffs. In that tangled mass of warehouses and rusted industry, lay every excuse and promise of a death foretold. Inert, empty, silent, vast. Those were the smokestacks that had killed off this part of the world. Those were the assembly lines that had choked us with products we did not need and had to be told we wanted, before the company had snuck in and shown us our truest, deepest desires. The district had a deceptive feel to it of dark and calm and quiet. Most of these buildings had structural damage, some even ripped open by the missiles of an ancient war. The route was easy to find, but physically difficult, a lot of climbing over stacked and cracked girders. You could trap a foot and twist your ankle, and I was soon sore in all the places where I had been wounded. I was armed this time with a metal bat and a beat-up pair of binoculars. No more spiders to spare, so I had one of Wick's poison beetles in the pouch on my belt. The beetles burrowed into flesh, opened their carapaces, and twirled around once inside you. The shock alone would be enough to kill. The way became less arduous once we were in the middle of the warren. There were narrow streets and pathways, and not always blocked by broken machinery or the remains of trucks, tires long gone. Torrents of rocks and concrete girders to the left, the highway of dust through it, and the factories on the right. Rocks, 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 pillars, 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 all smashed to hell. I always felt small in that place, amongst the cathedrals of that age. Trailing a little behind me, Bourne was a large rock that bumbled to a stop, soundless when I looked back. Almost stealthy. I kept walking, with a quick glance back every once in a while, since I couldn't persuade Bourne to walk beside me. Soon I was no longer being followed by a rock, but by a giant undulating worm, very similar to the ones that broke down waste in my apartment. Then, for a brief time, an enormous fly nervously buzzed forward, most unlikely of all. But my stalker soon realized that such an organism stood out like a sore thumb. Given what I knew about Bourne's sense of humor, I would not have been surprised by then if the next time I had looked back and seen a sore thumb. Instead, the next incarnation just confirmed what I already knew about Bourne, that he loved lizards, even though they did not love him. A giant lizard, roughly human size, clambered across the terrain behind me. An apologetic lizard, an embarrassed and socially awkward lizard, with huge bulging eyes and protruding tongue, a reptile that progressed in stops and starts, peeking out from behind boulders, checking to make sure I hadn't gotten too far ahead of him. It was hideous and amazing all at once. And that bothered me. I was continually being taught by Bourne how to read him. And yet what did this mean except that I was supposed to accept the impossible? It was then I stopped and, bat balanced over my shoulder, faced down the lizard. The lizard morphed back into a rock. Close enough now, I didn't have to shout to talk to it. Bourne, I can see you. You came out here with me. I know that it's you. Silence. Bourne, you've been a rock, a worm, a fly, and now a lizard. Do you think I'm stupid? Even if I hadn't brought you out here? The rock moved from side to side a little. You are the wrong size to be a fly or a lizard, and you look disgusting, like a swimming pool. I am a rock, Bourne said, muffled, as if from some orifice now underneath him. I am a rock? Oh, you're a rock, all right. You're a great big fucking rock. You're a boulder. Change back right this instant. I was seething. Was this a joke to him? It wasn't a joke to me. I did not like his style of camouflage, crude and almost comic, but not on purpose. Or if on purpose, even worse. Amazing, maybe, but the opposite of camouflage. A changed context could kill. And maybe I was paranoid, but I thought I'd caught another glimpse of that fox following us. "Bourne, I need you serious," I said to the boulder. The boulder mumbled something to itself. I wasn't sure if he knew I meant it or not. "I raised you from a pod, you know I did." We shared this myth because it was simple and easy, even though he'd not really been a pod and the raising had been all of 4 months, not exactly a lifetime. But maybe it felt like a lifetime to him. "Yes," the boulder admitted, "you raised me from a pod."
"And you know I want only the best for you?"
The boulder became a lizard again, but its skin matched the dull dust color everywhere around us. From a distance, I had no doubt that it looked like I was arguing with no one, with nothing. "The very best," Bourne said, "or the best you know how." "How do you do? Know how?" I ignored that rebellion, sidestepped it as my mom always had, raising me. "Out here, Bourne, you cannot be playful. You can be clever, watchful, resourceful, but you cannot be playful." All words he knew that I'd taught him. "You can only be playful inside the balcony cliffs." Bourne became Bourne again, which still managed to startle me. "I'm sorry, Rachel," Bourne said. "Can you please try to look like a person?" I asked. "Please?" "Yes," Bourne said, and became as person-like as he could, without a wizard hat, but instead a normal one, even though it was made of his own flesh and skin. That meant cowboy style, something he'd discovered in a tattered comic book, a Western. I wish he hadn't. It was foreign to me and meant less than nothing. We'd agreed on robes as his camouflage because that meant he didn't have to grow feet. He hated feet more and more as he grew up, maybe because his architecture, his physicality made it uncomfortable. God forbid he couldn't have 1,000 cilia propelling him forward over that rocky ground. More than anything, though, Bourne's antics had thrown me off, cut the connection between me and my surroundings, and I was having a hard time getting that awareness back. I should have marched him right back to the balcony cliffs, but instead I decided to press forward. Seeing an open doorway ahead, I ducked into a building at random, a large 4-story place with a buckling steel frame and not a window unbroken. Maybe someone had tried to live here once. But what we called company moss grew along the sides. You could eat company moss if you were starving, and its presence usually meant an abandoned place. Inside, spread out across the vast floor of the factory, the corroded remains of machinery, enough dust to choke 10 of me, pools of liquid rust, a series of ladders and stairs along the side wall leading to the roof, and nothing worth scavenging. We needed what could be burned or bled or transformed. Bourne, once inside, couldn't stay still. In an instant, he reverted to a kind of converted travel mode, shorter, about 5 feet tall, with an expanded base for support. At the top, the aperture had also widened out, the tentacles multiplying in number, but shorter and thicker, except for one that slowly rose like a periscope for a better vantage. The eyes that appeared occurred at the end of the tentacles and peered out in all directions like sentinels. He called this mode being layered thick. "What do you think you're doing?" I asked. "Exploring with you? Just because we're inside doesn't mean you can be born again. You have to stay, person born, as long as we're outside the balcony cliffs. I had told him this plenty of times before we'd left. None of the eye tentacles would look at me, but I didn't get the sense he was embarrassed or concerned. More that his attention was elsewhere. Yes, Rachel, you're right. But they're coming. They're coming soon, and you want to be ready, I think. I think you do? They're coming soon. That put the fear into me, quick. That and the sound of running feet. Many running feet. They were coming right then. The sound close and fast, and I couldn't tell from where. I just knew someone or something was coming. The only way out was up. So I ran with Bourne, up the ladders, the stairs, to the roof. Bourne once more a lizard so he could scuttle faster. Me and my lizard monster, lunging up the stairs to the roof.